highlights various local issues and organizations. It's hosted by Len Iaquinta, a nonprofit manager, fundraiser, and consultant, Jane Herring, a former marketing manager at Gateway Technical College, and Jenny Tunkies, former reporter for the Kenosha News and a former chief of staff for the Kenosha County Executive. Community Matters shares its time slot with the WGTD Radio Theater. And now, here's today's program.
Good morning and welcome to Community Matters. I'm Jane Herring. Today, we're going to learn a bit more about solar energy installations of all sizes. My guest today is Sam Dunaisky, who is the Executive Director of Renew Wisconsin. And so let's begin, Sam, with what Renew Wisconsin is all about.
Yeah, Renew Wisconsin is a nonprofit organization. We're a 501c3, and essentially we advocate for renewable energy in Wisconsin. A lot of that work is on the policy and the regulatory side, so a lot of work at the Public Service Commission, some efforts as well at the state capitol, and hoping to get, or trying, I should say, to get more favorable renewable energy legislation passed for the Badger State. We work on solar power, wind power, renewable natural gas, local hydroelectric power as well. And we also work on what we call sort of clean energy components. So these are technologies, things that we use that use energy, but right now they're powered by fossil fuels. So mostly we're talking about vehicles and transportation and kind of the electrifying of those vehicles, and also the electrification of our heating sector as well. So it's a lot of work in kind of heat pumps, both ground and air source, and also a little bit in battery energy technology as well, sort of storing those variable resources like solar and wind, and using those at times when those resources are not available to us. So we've been around since 1991. We just celebrated our 30th anniversary last summer. Two summers ago now that I think about it. And we're really excited. We're a growing industry. And we just ultimately, though, like I said, we advocate for renewable energy.
So in all of those years, you must have seen ups and downs in supportive legislation, or times where there isn't that kind of supportive legislation. Have you had to adjust your practice to meet those needs?
So I have been with Renew for about 5 years now, and the script has completely turned. I heard some horror stories before I came here. I actually came from Minnesota, so I came from a state that is kind of well known for its renewable energy policies. So the good thing, though, now about renewable energy is we are seeing a pretty widespread across the political divide. And a lot of the main reason, I should say, for that is the economics of renewable energy. There was just a new study that came out, I think it was just yesterday, as a matter of fact, that would be Tuesday, January 31st, that indicates that almost, I think it was 99% now, of coal facilities now have to operate at a higher cost than actually building and constructing brand new wind or solar resources. So the main reason why renewable energy now is a little less politically charged is honestly the economics of it. That's not to say it's not without, you know, some political shortcomings as well. But the folks that are now interested in this and interested in this transition that we're undergoing now has really, really grown just in the 5 years that I have been with the organization.
Well, and you point out something that I think I've heard associated with really any alternative energy in any application, is that ultimately for it to be a success, it has to be an economic advantage and it has to be easy. It sounds like you're trying, as an organization, to work both of those.
Yes. We want to remove some of the entanglements, let's say, to renewable energy adoption. You know, for a long time, I think most people thought of adoption of solar or wind or whatever energy source as a trade-off, right? It cost more, or it was more, you know, it wasn't as good for our budget, whether it be a household budget or sort of a society-wide budget, but it was the important thing to do, right? Now we don't have to really worry about that argument anymore. And that's what's made renewable energy now such a force in our state, in our country, in our world.
So I had mentioned earlier, the real focus of this interview is about solar. So why don't we make a switch to that right now? And if we have time, I'd like to come back and talk about comparing those different renewables as to what's easiest or more accessible these days. But let's talk solar. I almost don't know where to begin other than how about kind of the elevator speech of what's considered solar energy. And then I'd like to talk more about the different size projects, because to me, that seems like a big division. So solar, what are we talking about?
Yeah, so solar is really gaining strength, even in Wisconsin here. I think people are seeing, you know, solar arrays, solar projects kind of cropping up everywhere, whether it be on a you know, residential roof, or whether it be, you know, a larger sort of solar farm, as we call them. The interesting thing about solar, when we talk about solar, I should note out, we're talking about solar photovoltaic or solar PV. That is basically using solar panels to create electricity. So the way solar PV works is it's actually pretty simple. There are really just two components to a solar array, whether it be a rooftop residential array, or whether it be, like I said, a larger utility-based installation. And those two components are the solar panels, which I'm sure most people know about, and the other component is called an inverter. So solar panels, they make direct current or DC electricity. Most of our, you know, homes, lights, businesses, phones, you know, that all uses alternating current, AC electricity. So the inverter converts that DC or direct current into alternating current. So other than those two components and a few wires, really all solar is the same, honestly, whether it be, like I said, on a roof, on a field, wherever it might be. And that those electrons that are generated from those solar panels, if it's like a residential or what we call a behind the meter array, so this is usually like a rooftop on a home or a business, that electricity will, when it's first generated, it will go into that home, that building, and power all of the things basically that are drawing power. And then the rest of it will flow back onto the distribution grid, or, you know, kind of, it'll flow down essentially to your neighbor's neighbor. Kind of think of it almost like water, right? If you have a cup of water, maybe a few cups of water lined up, and you fill the first one, the next one is going to kind of drain in over to the second. So it basically, electrons are kind of similar to water in that it kind of just goes where it can go, or where it flows. So, you know, we have those behind the meter installations, front of the meter installations. These are typically those larger ones, medium to large installations that are built by the utilities. Those just go onto either the transmission or the distribution grid. And then again, like water, they just kind of flow out to wherever they're called. So, you know, sometimes those solar arrays, you know, we talk about how many homes they power. You know, that number varies widely, of course, because electricity is called upon in an instant-to-instant basis, right? So sometimes it will power, you know, tens of thousands of facilities. Sometimes it might power less than that. It really just depends. That it's a harder number to pin down. But, you know, typically a home, for instance, will use about 5 to 6 kilowatts of electricity. So that's generally how we kind of decide, you know, for big solar arrays, you know, how many homes, how many businesses those are offsetting.
When you're saying 5 to 6 kilowatts, over what time period?
So again, this is sort of overall, I mean, average, right? Like if we look at it like over long periods of time, which is probably the way we should look at it. You know, I'll talk strictly from like a home perspective, because we all, you know, go home at night, whether it's an individual house or an apartment or whatever. Our electrical demand actually spikes a lot throughout the day. You know, maybe we turn on the oven, maybe we run the dishwasher, maybe we put a load of laundry in. So that can spike a lot throughout the day. So like I said, depending on the exact time you're calling for that electricity, that demand can vary quite a bit. So when we talk about like 5 to 6 kilowatts is about an average household's use, that's like kind of smoothing those spikes out over the course of days or weeks or months or even years.
That helps a lot. Thank you. So here in at least in Kenosha County, I'm somewhat very slightly, but familiar with, we've got a really big farm, let's say, that's being considered in the town of Wheatland. We've got something that's under construction in Paris, the town of Paris, not the country or the city in France. And then I know of more people who are installing household, and then there's a nursing home that had recently put in an installation. So I personally am seeing a whole lot of it. But something I picked up from a story about the Wheatland installation is that, I understand, required PSC approval, yet the one in Paris, I believe, did not. Why would one require regulation from the Public Service Commission and the other one wouldn't? Is there a dividing line?
There is. So the Paris solar installation also did require Public Service Commission approval. So if a project, any kind of generating project, is over 100 megawatts in capacity or in size, that's when that project's approval would go to the Public Service Commission. We have a regulated utility market here in Wisconsin, and that means that utilities can't just decide to just kind of randomly build facilities, right? Because ratepayers have to pay that. So the Public Service Commission has to, you know, decide, are these, you know, resources or are these facilities that the utility either wants to build or wants to acquire from another developer, you know, do they make sense? Is there a need for that? So that's why, you know, projects 100 megawatts and above go to the Public Service Commission. If they're below that, and if they're, like I said, what we call front of the meter, so they're just feeding the grid, then they're approved at the local county level.
Okay. That's helpful. It's kind of interesting to me then that it sounds like there are what we would consider a traditional utility. And then those who are building these large installations, are they considered a utility or a developer? Or it's kind of hard to understand their place in the world.
It is. And, you know, that this is an area that is kind of confusing to a lot of folks, even folks within the industry. So typically, I'm just going to talk about solar and kind of typically how these projects have come to be over the last few years. And that is a developer, so like a third party company, excuse me, will come in. They're a business specifically geared in designing these projects. So they know the most cost effective and efficient way to do these. So what they will do is they will propose and develop a project. The utility comes along and they realize that, hey, this is a good project. They want to acquire those resources. So then they'll buy the facility from the developer. So it's kind of a bit of a public-private partnership in ways. You know, I know utilities are technically, you know, in Wisconsin, at least, a lot of them are investor-owned. So it is like a business, but it's a collaboration, I guess, of different industries and different businesses and organizations working together to get these projects built.
When that happens, I mean, are they always acquired by a utility, or might a developer hold on to the solar operation and just sell the power back to the utility? Does that ever exist?
I don't recall of any. Most of the time, a developer wants to sell that to the utility. You know, if they have to maintain and you know, kind of figure out how that electricity is generated and sell it to the utility over time. I as far as I know, it's not as It's not the ideal business transaction, I guess, is what I would say. So most, the vast majority of the time, these developers will sell those installations to the utility. The utility typically wants to have access to those resources. It just makes it easier to actually provide electricity to everyone, which is a very, very important job. I don't want to diminish the utility's role in this at all. So the utilities typically want to own these projects.
When you have, trying to figure out how to ask the question, I'm a little bit at a loss on here, but why wouldn't the utility go out and find somebody ahead of time? Why is it developer first, utility second, instead of utility first and developer second?
That's a good question, and I can really only speculate on the answer. These are just kind of my assumptions. But again, from what I understand is, you know, developers, this is their business model, right? They know how to do this. They know how to, like I said, how to design these projects the most efficiently and the most cost effectively. But utilities don't necessarily know how to design these especially renewable energy projects. So because that's not necessarily what they specialize in, that's why utilities typically let the developer do that first stage and then acquire it later. It's kind of like, I know in some cities across the US, like for instance, cities contract with like a garbage or a waste disposal company to handle like picking up, you know, residents' garbage, because they're just, you know, a private business and they're just better at it, I guess, than the government is. Or in this case, developers are better at developing these projects than the utilities are. But that being said, Alliant Energy, for instance, is actually developing their own projects too. So it's definitely not, this is not the only way, right? There's multiple ways that this can happen. And Alliant, in fact, is developing and constructing and producing their own projects too. So it's not, I just want to be very clear that this is not the only way Alliant and I think other utilities are doing this, but Alliant is the first one that comes to mind.
I appreciate the, you know, getting a better understanding of it, because you kind of pick and choose when you're reading articles and not quite sure what's going on back there. Thank you. Let's make a switch now to the behind the meter or residential small commercial type installations. That really seems to be growing. Is it because there are more experts? Is it because of incentives? What's happening right now that seems to make people more interested?
Very good question. I had been running a residential program here in the city of Madison for several years, and we're seeing a wide variety of reasons why folks want to adopt solar and install solar on their own homes. And we say, you know, whatever reason you want to go with is great for us. We just want to see more more solar adopted. I think the big reason is solar is very scalable, right? We can have a whole large solar installation in a field or a farm or something like that. But we could also have just a couple of panels on our own rooftop. You know, I mean, I actually have a toy in my office with a little solar cell, and it kind of flicks back and forth, you know, so it's really scalable, solar cells are. And this is something that isn't seen in other generation sources, right? Like we don't each have a tiny coal plant at our house to generate our electricity, right? So the fact that solar is so scalable is really appealing to just, like I said, all sorts of people, all walks of life. The economics, of course, are a huge factor. Residential solar now is basically has about a 10 to 12 year payoff, depending on a lot of factors, you know, who's your utility provider, which direction your solar array faces, how much, you know, maybe trees or other things might be shading your installation. Typically a residential array will pay for itself in about 10 years, which is, it's very tangible, so people can really plan for it. And honestly, it's a much quicker payback than a lot of other things. I speak at a lot of home remodeling shows and things like that, and I say, you know, what's the payback on a a roof, right? Or what's the payback on siding, right? This is a very tangible payback that homeowners can have. And it also increases the value of their home too, right? If you're going to sell your home and so is your neighbor, you know, your homes are basically the same age, the same size, things like that. And one home has an electric bill that's maybe $40 a month versus one that has an electricity bill that's $150 per month. That's kind of a no-brainer, I think, for most folks. And solar also doesn't really require a whole lot of maintenance. I say you just kind of put it up there and it just makes power and you don't really have to do anything else. That's really the great part about solar is there's very little things to go wrong. It's a chemical reaction that takes place. That's how the that's how the electricity is produced. So it's easy. It's more affordable now. And especially with a lot of utilities, electric rates rising, it's even more appealing, I think, to a lot of people out there.
Well, you know, Sam, I'm going to have to ask the question. We had the month of January in our part of this state. We almost saw the sun twice. People are going to say, how can solar still work when it's cloudy every day?
That is a very, very good question. Probably the question I get asked most, not even so much clouds, but especially in Wisconsin. And as we've seen just in the last couple of weeks, snow, right?
Yeah.
So I'm not going to sugarcoat it. If snow falls on panels and it stays there, especially if we get, you know, snow followed by a cold snap, what we're seeing right now, those solar panels aren't going to make electricity. And sometimes that will happen, that they won't make electricity for several days or maybe even several weeks. The good thing is when we do get snow, typically, you know, all of the panels are fixed at an angle. They're a little bit warmer, you know, there's always a little bit of electricity kind of flowing through them. They're a black color usually. So they snow will melt off the panels a lot faster than it will melt off surrounding surfaces like the ground or the rest of your roof for that matter. The other exciting thing is even on cloudy days, solar panels still produce electricity. I totally agree with the weather we've had. I started my career as a operational meteorologist. So these things are very near and dear to my heart. But honestly, even on cloudy days, solar panels will still produce electricity. They won't produce that, you know, max or that nameplate capacity, but they're still going to produce electricity. And the other good thing is, and this is me getting to promote my former industry in meteorology, is we can forecast those days ahead of time, right? We can see when there's going to be cloud cover, and we can utilities can then make kind of contingency plans and find out where they need to find other resources from and things like that.
Considering just, let's say, the home enterprise, is there a way of storing that fabulous energy that you have used and then the excess goes back to the utility? And I'd like to explain that a little bit. Or is there a way I can store my excess for those cloudy days?
So there's two kind of things, like if we're just talking from like a residential perspective or a homeowner perspective, there's basically two ways we can utilize all of the excess energy that gets produced. And quite often, like, especially on a day like today, or at least in Madison here, you know, we have a lot of sunshine. And if folks are at work, you know, their home might not be using a lot of electricity. So that's why it's really good for that electricity. So I actually should rewind just a little bit. The vast majority of residential arrays or any kind of behind the meter array, whether it's a home or a business, is still tied to the grid. And that's good for many reasons. But the main reason is because on days like today, when your solar array is producing more electricity than you need, again, that electricity flows back out onto the grid. And the utility, most utilities will give you credit for that extra electricity that you export. The amount that they compensate for you can vary quite a bit depending on the utility and the installation. But essentially what happens is your electric meter will literally run backwards. We call it net metering. So essentially from a billing perspective, that person who owns that array what just pay is, you know, at the end of the month or whenever their bill comes due for the net of their meter. So let's say, for instance, you have a home and your solar array produces 1,000 kilowatt hours of electricity and your home consumes 1,200 kilowatt hours of electricity. You only have to pay for the 200 kilowatt hours plus connection fees and things like that. And so that's a really good way of not only reducing your bill, but also utilizing that energy, even if not from a actual usage perspective. The other way to utilize that extra energy is to actually install batteries. Batteries have become, really popular in the last few years. They are still quite expensive, but they are coming down in price, and they're getting more efficient. You know, they're not getting physically bigger, but more storage is enabled. And that is a way where you can actually store those electrons produced by the sun to be utilized later. Some people, most of the folks that I know that have batteries now, they are either doing it not necessarily to save more money, but kind of use as like a resiliency or like a contingency plan, you know, if the grid loses power, because if the grid does lose power, actually your solar array will not work in the normal way, just because we can't have like electrons and electricity flowing onto the grid, because that can make it dangerous for the workers when they have to go fix that grid. So batteries, long story short, batteries still quite expensive. They're coming down in price though. And that is really the, in my opinion, at least, the best way to utilize those electrons that are produced from the sun.
I'm going to ask you to back up there a little bit about the power outage problems. What did you just say about that? That's it'll stop you from being able to generate using your solar power panels?
So yeah, a lot of the ways that these grid-connected solar arrays work is when the grid goes down, the solar array itself will also shut off. Again, because you can export things to the grid, we can't have electricity flowing through the wires when folks are working on it. So typically, there's a code that requires those solar arrays to shut down. Another fun fact, since we are having all these great changes in technology as well, I have learned also that there are new inverters. So again, that's what converts the DC electricity to AC. There are new inverters that will essentially allow a building to island from the grid. So they can kind of shut off any power that might flow out onto the grid, but they can still produce power. So like today, for instance, if you had one of these inverters and the grid went down, you would still be able to use your refrigerator, your computer, whatever, because the sun is shining, and you would essentially kind of island yourself temporarily from the grid. So that's another just really cool way that we can incorporate all of these different technologies in and kind of still go on leading our normal lives, so to speak.
That does sound fascinating, and it sounds like an excellent development, given from what you said. I think that a lot of people do, they might not think of what you had just said and figure, oh yeah, I'm automatically islanded. All right. What I guess I would like to talk about a little bit is what Renew does to encourage these types of solar developments from start to finish. I mean, you gave me an excellent overview of what you do for renewable energy, but can you give me some examples of specific programs that you operate?
Yeah, so typically we advocate for all solar projects, big and large. We take our real answer D, all of the above kind of approach when it comes to solar. We think the utilities should definitely have some solar. We also think that individuals should have access to solar as well. So, you know, a lot of the policies and the legislation we advocate for, you know, incorporate all of that. We also have some very specific programs that we run too. I mentioned we administer the City of Madison solar program. It's called Madison, M-A-D-I-S-U-N. And that program has both a residential program, a business program, and a program for nonprofits and affordable housing providers. So the residential program, we connect residents with qualified, reputable solar installers in the area. By collecting a lot of them at one point, we're able to kind of bring the price down, you know, as a whole through, you know, bulk purchasing and things like that. We had over 60 homes in the Dane County area sign up last year. It was our best year ever. We also have, like I said, this business program. What we do with that program is we connect potential or prospective solarized businesses with other businesses that have already gone solar, kind of help walk them through the process. We also offer some rebates and incentives through that program. And then our third program is called the Backyard Solar Program. So this one is specifically geared towards nonprofits and affordable housing providers in the Madison area. And we provide grants for those organizations that help offset some of the upfront costs. The other big program that we run, the other big solar program, I should say, that Renew administers is called Solar for Good. This is actually very similar to the Madison Backyard program, but it's a statewide program. So what Solar for Good does is we issue either grants or actually free solar panels for nonprofits all over the state to help them go solar. We are over 160 different nonprofits now across Wisconsin. And I believe if all of the projects that have won or received grants through our program come to fruition, we will install over 7 megawatts of solar, which is actually more than 1% of all of the solar in the entire state of Wisconsin. So we're really proud of that program. It really shows, again, the power and the scalability of what solar can do for everyone in our state.
You know, obviously you want to help nonprofit organizations be more self-sufficient, but is that the main reason why you pick nonprofits to concentrate on with the Solar for Good program?
Yes, you know, nonprofits typically a lot more cash-strapped than other organizations. Initially, when we started the program, it was because nonprofits could not utilize the federal tax credits, the investment tax credits that were out there. Thankfully, with the Inflation Reduction Act, now nonprofits are also able to take advantage of those tax credits too through a direct payment option. So we really expect for not just Solar for Good, but really for solar among the nonprofit community in Wisconsin to really take off in the next few years, because that, you know, those tax credits really helped out either homeowners or businesses install solar, because it reduced the overall kind of out-of-pocket cost of these installations. And if we can apply that to, you know, churches, veterans groups, animal shelters, et cetera, if we can apply it to those types of organizations as well, we're going to see even more solar adoption around our state.
Let's talk about that change with tax credits. For example, is that something that Renew Wisconsin would have been at the table advocating for that change? Or is your role more communication to nonprofits that change occurred?
Our role is much more on the communication side. So the policies and the legislation we advocate for is typically at the state level. We often don't get involved with federal legislation just because we feel like our voice gets a little diluted, but we can make a much bigger impact on the state and the local level. So that's where we focus on. So as the kind of rules and the administration around that direct pay option for solar for nonprofit gets sorted out, a big effort for us, a big push that we're going to do is to, you know, educate nonprofits around the state how they can utilize those funds and how they can acquire them.
Tell me a bit about your staffing of the organization, because there's a heck of a lot of nonprofits all over the state, and reaching out to them sounds like a job.
Yeah, we have our organization is growing. When I first came in 5 years ago, I think there were four of us here full time on staff. We're now up to a organization of 18 folks total. We have some interns. We have some part time folks as well. But as you said, yeah, it is a big job. Both the communication, the administration, and all of the other work around the around advocating for renewable energy, quite frankly. And the reason we're growing is because the industry is growing as well. You know, Wisconsin is kind of looked at as being a little bit behind some of our neighbors like Minnesota or Illinois in terms of renewable energy adoption. But the industry kind of views that in a different way. The industry kind of views that in a good way, in that, you know, we're a state and a market that's ready for more renewable energy. And you know, thankfully, we're able to maybe avoid some of the hiccups and some of the other pitfalls that some other states and some other organizations have seen. So we're really excited for the future, and there's just so much that we can do. I think the future, I pardon the pun, but the future looks very bright for solar here in Wisconsin.
I've worked with some alternative fuels in my past, and I know that there always is that road up and road down when it comes to legislative support, but also the economies of scale, also having the technology background. Do you feel that right now the success that you're experiencing is that all three of those areas, the technology, the legislation, and the economics are in your favor and you're kind of riding that wave? Would any of those change in the near future, do you think?
I don't think so. You know, the cost, I think, for like solar and some of these other technologies has gone up, but like the cost of everything has gone up, right? Like it's we're not seeing it escalate in the same way eggs, for instance, has increased. But yeah, I think, you know, between those three things, I totally agree that the time is really, it is a great time to be in this industry and to be advocating for this technology and for this transformation. You know, the one other thing that you did mention, I think, is kind of like the public opinion. You know, I think more people than ever realize that this transition needs to happen. It needs to happen as quickly and safely and efficiently as we can possibly do it. And so I think we also have public opinion, public capital on our side as well. And that's not to say that everyone loves renewable energy and everyone loves solar and everyone loves wind. But much more people now are coming around to these technologies because they've seen what they can do. You know, we have to export billions of dollars every year in Wisconsin to bring in coal and natural gas and other fuels. And we can keep those dollars in state by developing, you know, our own wind and solar and renewable gas and other resources. So it really it's really a win-win-win all over for our state. And that's why I think so many more people are coming around to it.
In the constant battle of NIMBY, not in my backyard, does solar seem to be the least objectionable of energy sources these days as far as citing them?
It's hard to say for sure. We haven't had a whole lot of wind development recently in Wisconsin. So most of, you know, the renewable energy sources from a utility standpoint that have come online have been solar. So we've seen more opposition to solar, but only because those have been the projects that have been proposed. And I don't want to diminish, you know, that NIMBYism at all. The big feedback or the big pushback, I think, that we get is, you know, taking land out of use. And I think that's a very understandable argument to have. I grew up in Minnesota. My family had 55 acres of land where a lot of it was, my parents had a Christmas tree farm for a while. And my dad always said when I was growing up, you know, they're not making any more land, son. And it's true, right? The land is very valuable. But, you know, I think we need to remember, even if we're just looking at from kind of like an agriculture perspective, over 30% of the corn that we grow in Wisconsin goes to ethanol. So we're already kind of, you know, taking land and taking, you know, food production out of the loop, and we're already kind of growing some energy. And if we put solar on that land, we're actually going to create a lot more energy than we would by planting corn and taking that corn and turning it into ethanol. So I totally understand the pushback where it may be, but I think that once folks realize all of the other benefits that adding more solar and more wind resources can have, they're going to come around and see that it is definitely a check in the win column for Wisconsin.
We have just a few seconds left, but how can they find more information out about Renew Wisconsin and solar programs in general?
Well, we actually have a great website. There's a bunch of information there. It's called renewwisconsin.org, RENEWWISCONSIN.org. We have a great resources page that will talk all about solar, wind, other resources. We also talk about our programs, who we are as folks, our board, our business members too.
And we've run out of time, Sam. I've learned so much. We've been talking with the executive director of Renew Wisconsin, Sam Dunajski, about solar energy installations. We've talked about those large farms that ultimately become operated by utilities for the most part, to the small home solar units. As Sam was just mentioning, Renew Wisconsin is dedicated to supporting and promoting all forms of renewable energy. And their website gives you lots of information, as he just said. And you can find that again at renewwisconsin.org. And that's with both of the W's. So RENEWWISCONSIN.org. Thanks for joining me today on Community Matters. I'm Jane Herring.
You've been listening to Community Matters. All programs are archived at WGTD.org. Click shows. This is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva.
Well, this week on WGTD's Noon Tunes, we're enjoying the music of Racine singer-songwriter Cynthia Chico. At the end of every WGTD Midday News, we feature a song by a local artist. So please join us for Noon Tunes Monday through Friday, 12:20 p.m. here on WGTD HD.
Support for WGTD comes from the Carthage College Business and Professional Coalition, proudly presenting Caring for the Community, Creating a Culture of Mental Health. The panel discussion will feature experts from corporate, hospital, and public health settings. Join the coalition Wednesday, February 15th at 11:30 a.m. to learn how these leaders support the mental health of their employees and their workplaces. The luncheon is free and open to the public. To learn more and to register, visit carthage.edu/businesscoalition.